98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Pickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Pickley. Fitz Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Pickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show that's ever existed.
It really, really is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Pickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
Happy beginning of the Masters to all you golf fans in the Valley. Unfortunately, we will not be talking golf today. There's too much important stuff to get to.
Come on, we can squeeze it in, can't we?
My private hell. It's okay, I can deal with it.
There's golf happening and I can't even talk about it.
Right, right.
Look, you know, you can grab the steering wheel every once in a while, Bick.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if anything interesting happens.
You know what happens at 1 o'clock?
That is true.
Things usually get pretty loose on this show at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah. So how was the vibe in the arena last night, Vin?
It was all right. Yeah, nothing special. No, it was fantastic. I completely undersold what was to transpire last night when I said it won't be a playoff atmosphere. And again, you got to jog the memory banks a decade to feel or try to remember what it felt like to have a playoff atmosphere in that building. But it felt like it.
Yeah.
And there was 5,500 people there, and that was the first game this year, Bick, where I noticed there were fans there, and they were into the game.
5,500, including my good friend John Cleese.
He can't be that good a friend. He's a Jazz fan.
Who went on some crusade to get tickets for the game, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I believe he contacted everybody in town who could possibly have had a connection. Uh-huh.
He could have just asked us.
But he got him.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. And he's a Jazz fan.
Can I tell a quick funny story? Because I wasn't here for the John Cleese interview on Monday.
Right.
But I got a text from a coworker who got a text or a message from somebody he had crossed paths with and met one time saying, hey, we just interviewed John Cleese. Wondering if there's any connection for Suns tickets. So this got forwarded to me because, you know, I work for the Suns. And I can get anybody tickets at any time, you know, because I have that kind of pull.
Yeah.
So I just text my director at the Suns. And I'm like, you know who John Cleese is from Monty Python? He's like, oh, trust me, I've already heard.
That's great. What did John Cleese have to say about you, Jared? Do you have that clip handy?
No.
Oh, you don't?
I'm sorry. Okay. I can get it.
No.
Give me just a second.
No, it's okay.
It was good to see John Cleese got his tickets.
Yeah,
and,
good.
You know, got
an icon. He should get
tickets. Yes, absolutely.
He's a legend.
And he got to watch his team get beat down last night.
Great.
It was a win-win.
All right, let's get into it. Start the show, Carlin.
The Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Well, it was hyped by many as a game that should have playoff atmosphere, and it lived up to the hype. Phoenix Suns got 35 points from Devin Booker, 29 points, 9 assists from Chris Paul in a 117-113 overtime win over the Utah Jazz in a game pitting the teams with the two best records in the league. Suns led by 11 at the half. Utah then explodes for 38 points in the third quarter to take a one-point lead going into the fourth. Late in the fourth, Donovan Mitchell hit a three-pointer with 10 seconds to go to tie it. Devin Booker missed a long jumper at the buzzer. It went to overtime. Suns never looked back from there. They iced it with two free throws from Chris Paul with 7 seconds left. 7 in a row for the Suns. Yeah. Now within a game and a half of Utah in the West, and another big one on tap tonight.
It wasn't always the prettiest basketball game, but it was a fight. You could tell the intensity was at a different level, and everybody to a man said that felt like a playoff game. So that's good. That's exactly what this basketball team needed to experience.
I was talking to some guys after the game last night, too, and they're like, how thrilled is ESPN with the second half of that doubleheader? They continue to put the New Orleans Pelicans on national TV, and you always get blowout after blowout. So to get that game following the first game, which was a blowout by Brooklyn, they had to be thrilled. I haven't watched every game in the league, obviously, this year. That's got to be one of the top games of the year so far.
Yeah, so it lived up to its billing.
Absolutely.
It certainly did. Donovan Mitchell, Chris Paul, Devin Booker. Yeah, it was good stuff.
Royce O'Neal. George Niang. Suns are in L.A. tonight to take on the Clippers. National TV once again on TNT. And, of course, you can hear all the action here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, beginning with pregame coverage at 6:30. For as good a night as it was for the Suns, it was equally as bad for the D-backs, who got roughed up 8-0 by the Rockies at Coors Field. Madison Bumgarner, making his second start of the year, got touched up for 5 runs on 8 hits and 5 innings of work. That didn't matter since the D-backs didn't score, but Bumgarner's ERA, 11 on the season and 7.28 as a Diamondback. To make matters worse, Ketel Marte, off to a white-hot start, left the game in the 6th inning, apparently injuring a hamstring on the way to first base on a ground out. D-backs 2-4, rubber game of the series happening this afternoon in Denver. Merrill Kelly against John Gray. 12:10 is the first pitch. Pre-game coverage starting at 11:30 on ESPN 620
AM.
Yeah,
what a... I can't believe the Diamondbacks are in this position again with a uber-expensive starting pitcher. It's almost mind-boggling that they're dealing with the same issue they thought they had with Zach Greinke. And what Madison Bumgarner is doing made Zach Greinke's tenure with the Diamondbacks look like Randy Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good at all. I don't know if it's going to turn for him.
D-backs are also shuffling their rotation. Lefty Caleb Smith now working out of the bullpen after just one start. Smith did pitch 2 scoreless innings last night with 5 strikeouts. Arizona also placed reliever Chris Devensky on the restricted list and selected the contract of right-handed reliever Anthony Swarzak, who made his D-backs debut by giving up 3 runs in an inning of work last night.
Yeah.
It was all bad.
Yeah, and so much for the optimism of yesterday, right? I think there was a pretty good reason why we were about as restrained as anybody when it came to that victory in extra innings.
Well, I didn't expect 8-0 and your best player to get hurt. I mean, that's a bad day at the
that
office, but I agree with the sentiment.
Yeah.
Coyotes built a 3-1 lead after 40 minutes against the Kings, but couldn't hold on. L.A. erupts for 3 third-period goals and a 4-3 win as Adrian Kempe, Jeff Carter, and Carl Grundstrom all scored for the Kings in the third. The Yotes move on to Vegas for the next 2 starting tomorrow night at T-Mobile Arena. The Masters is underway. First-round action at Augusta National. You might have to help me with some of these names, Bick. Will Zalatoris, Siwoo Kim, Hideki Matsuyama, and Christian
Bezuidenhout.
Bezuidenhout?
I don't know.
Bless
I've seen the name many, many times.
They're all,
I don't think I've ever heard it pronounced.
They're all under three under par at different spots on the course. Webb Simpson is one stroke back at 2 under. We'll keep you updated on the happenings there. Some of the bigger names tee off. Speaking of golf, Tiger Woods crashed last month, caused by excessive speed. That was announced by the L.A. County Sheriff's Office on Wednesday. Woods' SUV was traveling from 84 to 87 miles per hour on a downhill stretch of road outside Los Angeles that had a speed limit of 45. The SUV was going 75 miles per hour when it hit a tree. So he went from, hey, we know what happened, we're not going to tell anybody, to Tiger, I guess, giving the okay for the details to be reported?
Yeah, that's the way I read the story, that the only reason any of this came out is Tiger agreed to the release of the information because the information was that he was just speeding. Now, there's some weirdness involved in this. People said the black box claims that Tiger Woods was accelerating at the time of the rollover, so maybe his foot hit the gas pedal or whatever, but this is the end of it. But he was going at a very reckless speed.
I don't know if it is. If he was accelerating at the time, if the black box said that, one of the sub-headlines that I read was unknown if Woods was conscious at impact.
Wow. Well, that would change things a little bit, wouldn't it? Yeah, listen, there are people, I've heard people say, look, man, the guy almost died and he didn't hurt anybody. Give him a break. But then there have other been people said, listen, this is 3 different incidents. And, you know, you might want to get him off the road.
Maybe.
Yeah.
College basketball still buzzing after Arizona's firing of 12-year head coach Sean Miller yesterday. Athletic Director Dave Hickey held a very vague press conference yesterday that didn't outline a timetable for finding a replacement, but did say they'd hire a coach as fast as they could. Scratch one candidate off the list, whether or not he was serious. Former Wildcat and Sacramento Kings head coach Luke Walton told the Sacramento Bee he has no interest in the position. Gonzaga assistant Tommy Floyd, Pacific's Damon Stoudemire, Georgia Tech's Josh Pastner all appear to be realistic candidates for the Arizona job.
John Wilner, big advocate of Eric Musselman, wrote a piece today, and John Wilner knows his stuff, said this is the guy for the job.
Yeah, I mean,
for what it's worth,
Eric Musselman has shown a tendency to move around, went from Nevada to Arkansas, is building something pretty cool in Arkansas. I wonder if he's ready to move back west. We shall see. I think that would be a pretty good hire for Arizona, quite honestly. There you go. There's your splash for Thursday, April. I forgot to update the date on my show sheet. Thursday, April 8th. What year is it? Coming up next, lots of details to dive into on a great win for the Phoenix Suns over the Utah Jazz last night in one of the games of the year of the NBA. That's coming up next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata. Bickley and Murata.
.15 left in overtime. They go to Booker. Booker just right of the lane with his back to the basket against Mitchell. Booker into the lane. Fakes, can't get the shot off. Gets it out to Chris Paul. 3 seconds. Paul for three. Shazam! Oh, brother! 114-108 Suns. A minute to go in overtime.
Yeah, we got a real team. You know, the shots down the stretch. Jay hit a few big shots. Cam hit a few big shots. D.A. was huge. He got us a lot of extra possessions. So I think we, with these games right here, we really get a chance to show, you know, our depth.
Chris Paul with a huge three in overtime, as you heard Al McCoy call it, three of his 29 points. And then Chris Paul after the game, I love the way he starts that. We have a real team.
Yep.
There was little doubt about that before last night, but if there was any lingering doubt in anybody's mind after last night, sorry, it's all gone now. This is a true contender for an NBA title, in my opinion.
Yeah, that might have been a safe takeaway out of last night's game, and that's a good thing because, like I said, the game really kind of resembled two teams that really wanted to prove something, two teams that really wanted to win, and it to a man, they all said it felt like a playoff atmosphere, and that to me, it felt different watching the game, and there's so many great takeaways if you're a Phoenix Suns fan here from the amount of endgame scoring from Devin Booker to Chris Paul to the way Chris Paul made all those clutch shots at the end to the performance of DA last night to everything. It was a nice display confirming the new pedigree of this basketball team.
Well, and it also wasn't a game where, look, we can all agree too, Utah is really good. To score 40 points in the first half and then score 38, almost matching that total in the third quarter alone. When they get that offense cranked up and they start hitting those threes, they're a really difficult team to deal with. But for the Suns to get a win, yeah, there was a ton of good. You listed it off, but it wasn't all good. Mikal Bridges had a really tough night. Now, he did his best on the defensive end. You know you're always going to get that from him, but he was really limited by foul trouble. I thought there were a couple of chintzy calls that went against him and maybe affected his confidence offensively when he was out there for 20 minutes. But Cam Johnson stepped up, played big minutes. As you heard Chris Paul say, made some very key shots in overtime. It's funny to hear all the talk about playoff atmosphere, Bick, because nobody in the NBA has played in a real playoff atmosphere in well over a calendar year.
Good point. Yeah, it's a good point.
So to hear Utah, that's got plenty of playoff experience on that roster, kind of say it going in, and man, was I way off on assessing what the atmosphere would be like, because it felt like playoff games of years past for the Phoenix Suns last night. The crowd was into it, but the atmosphere was built by whatever the 10 players were on the floor last night, in addition to the way the game was being called. That was just special. It was a great basketball game and obviously a great outcome for the Suns.
Yeah, and so now they get a chance to do it back-to-back, and if they win this game tonight, I think that is certainly a sign that they are in this to win this.
Yep. Monty Williams, did it feel like a playoff game to you?
I mean, Yeah, it did. I mean, I think I saw a quote from Royce O'Neal that, you know, they were going to play it like a playoff game. And to be straight with you guys, I approach every game that way. You know, we've always said we want to approach every game the same way. That way we don't have to change when we get where we want to go. But the intensity, the physicality, the officiating certainly reminded me of a playoff game. And then for it to go into overtime felt just like that.
Yeah, the game really had everything. Shot with 10 seconds left from Mitchell, two young stars going back and forth in crunch time, where Booker came up short on that last shot, which I thought was in. It was right on line from my vantage point. But then the Suns don't even blink in overtime.
That's the key thing.
Yeah.
To get to overtime after giving up that late three to Donovan Mitchell like that, to come out and to immediately take control and for Chris Paul to do what he did, really, that was one of the best takeaways for me, because that's the kind of stuff you deal with in the playoffs all the time. The gut-wrenching moments, the deflating shots, and can you flush them immediately? And they did. They did last night in overtime.
And I'm sure you heard it. Vinny was sitting that close, but there was a couple plays in overtime after Paul made a shot or made a big play. He was just screaming at Suns and screaming at the crowd. It was pretty awesome.
Well, yeah. Listen, when Jay Crowder made that three late, you could hear the place go crazy. He went crazy. There were a couple moments like that. Chris Paul emoting in a way that I haven't seen him yet this year. But the beauty of it all, as I was watching last night's game, the people who underestimated Chris Paul, maybe who didn't understand his pedigree, I couldn't help but think about that last night, because he is just so calm in the moment. And do you know how important that is?
So glad you brought that up, because, you know, I mean, we were both on this show on board from moment one. When those rumors started, it was like, yes, that's exactly what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You go get a guy like Chris Paul. I knew Chris Paul was great. But getting a chance to watch him every night, I had no idea how great he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about, and people, oh, look at the playoff failures. He's never played in the finals. Blah, blah. He is phenomenal.
Yeah,
was put on this earth to play basketball, and he's nearly mastered it.
Yeah, yeah, just the level of, like I said, the level of poise and calmness in endgame situations with the guy who's dribbling the basketball. It's everything. It's everything in the NBA. So that to me, the endgame scoring of, or put it the two men scoring. I don't know if you want that all the time, but that's kind of what I envisioned. At a best case scenario with this basketball team, because you have a couple of great closers at the guard position. And that's another great asset to have in these really important games.
And we owe it to DeAndre Ayton to say what great big offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, and blocks he had in the fourth quarter.
He sure did.
He was fantastic last night. Here's DeAndre Ayton talking about the energy in the building.
I love it. Just seeing everybody, seeing the jerseys, you know, just seeing the opponents, fans out there as well. Just, you know, that's what the NBA is about. You know, we're entertaining. This is where amazing happens. And, you know, you can feel the energy. It's, you know, on the court, and you just want to play hard for them. You know what I'm saying? You just want more chance, and you just want to do the right thing, you know, that, you know, help us on the scoreboard. And, you know, you felt the energy, and it helped a lot. Even though they hit big shots, Donovan hit a big three, you know, the fans still was in there with us, and you could hear them holding our back, even though the chants and stuff while we were shooting free throws, they were super excited, screaming MVP. And I missed all of it, to be honest. I missed all of it.
I'm so glad DeAndre Ayton went there. Late in overtime with Devin Booker stepping to the line in a game that's a one-possession game. If he misses a free throw, maybe that's not the greatest time to chant MVP, ironically. Maybe wait until there's a little bit of a cushion.
Yeah,
maybe with Chris Paul, and I know Chris Paul's like a 95% free throw shooter, but maybe when there's a chance he could miss a free throw and keep it a one-possession game, that's not the time to start singing na 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 hey hey goodbye. I know it's been a while.
It's been a
long time.
They need to sort of hand out flyers and pamphlets on what
reminding
to do. It's not even reminding people. A lot of these people don't even know what to do. They don't even have a memory of it, so they can't even be reminded.
Look, I'm nitpicking because the energy in there was phenomenal. At the time, I'm like, if Book misses a free throw, this is a one possession game.
Yeah.
and he missed the second free throw. That would be like coming to the line of scrimmage in a big play in football and you know, waving on the home crowd. Come on, make noise. No, be quiet. Wow. Cheer after he makes the free throw. I'm not saying that's why you missed it, but there's so many more aspects and tangents to get into on last night's game, the national reaction, the local reaction, and going into another big one tonight against the L.A. Clippers on the road. You want to talk about statements? The Suns win last night, going to L.A. again on national television and beat the Clippers.
What a brutal. I hadn't realized it was home and road, this back-to-back. Brutal.
Well, it's only L.A. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, short flight.
Yeah.
Tough team.
Yeah.
But
if they do, if they pull this off tonight, that's going to be a real impact statement.
Yes. And, you know, when we consider the Valley sports scene, for every peak like the Suns game, there's also a Valley like last night's D-backs performance. We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Marotta on this Thursday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Of the stretch and the pitch, and a shot to right center field. Marte back, can't get it. Extra bases, a run scores. Owens will stop at second with a second double. It's 5-0 Colorado. He's 3-for-3 today.
Yeah, Greg Schulte on the call. Chris Owings doing major damage to his former team. He heard it, 3-for-3, two doubles, a triple, two runs batted in. Owings beat the Diamondbacks last night. The Rockies also chipped in as well. 8-0 in what was not a good night for the D-backs all the way around. Ketel Marte leaving the game in the sixth inning with an apparent hamstring injury, as you heard Mitch say on the update there. Not in the lineup today. We know that these days, hamstring injuries, depending on the severity, they can last quite some time. And when you take your best player out of the lineup, it's never a good thing. We could start there. We could start with the Madison Bumgarner performance.
Yeah, listen, Ketel Marte, he's not in the lineup today. That loss would be terrible. But I think let's start with Madison Bumgarner, because to me, the story is on the verge of really kind of souring everything, I would think. And this is, from what I can tell, this is something that's going to be really difficult for this baseball team to overcome, because I don't know where Madison Bumgarner is going to go from here. Torey Lovello, after the game, said he was okay. Cameron Cox from Channel 12 said, when is okay become a problem?
Yeah, here's Torey Lovello on using that adjective, just okay.
We know that he's working hard. He's got a process. He's got a plan. And he's prepared. This game can be unrewarding at times. And, I think just consistency with locating the baseball is very important for him and all of our pitchers. I think when he fine-tunes that, you're going to see a better version than what you've seen so far this year, so far this season.
Yeah, when is okay not good enough? Here was Torey Lovello on that.
Hard to answer that question, Cam. I don't necessarily have a perfect answer, because I'm still getting to know Bum. There was limited starts last year because of the short season and his time spent on the DL. There's only two this year. So out of fairness to him, I still think that we're in a period of time where he's going to come out the other end and be everything that we need him to be.
To me,
he's coming out the other end.
I'm not calling it.
That is one way to put it, I suppose.
I wonder what Archie Bradley would say about
Carlin,
all of this.
You can go home now.
You're not going to top that moment.
You're not going to top that. That's funny.
To me, translation, and I don't want to call Torey Lovello a liar here, they're already really concerned.
Listen.
What are you going to do?
I know. This is where I feel bad for Torey Lovello. When I say that Torey Lovello's contract is going to become an issue with fans, it's because I know the way he speaks, and he always protects his players.
Always.
And he's always overly optimistic, to the point where it doesn't make people feel good to hear that after a bad performance. And so it's going to add up, and it's going to take a toll on Torey Lovello, because he's going to have to continue doing this all season long. Because I listened to pretty much everything said about last night's game, and very few of his quotes even matched up to the baseball game that I partially paid attention to.
Well, you got to watch more of it than I did because I was down at the arena. But what was the velocity like?
I mean,
that seems to be a big – I don't think it's the biggest issue, obviously, but it seems to be one that everybody focuses
he
on.
He just – I mean, okay is the right word. That I think that's pretty much what he is, but he's not been good. He, aside from the end of the pandemic season, shortened season last year, he just hasn't had good outings at all. So if you're saying an outing was just okay, I'm fine with that if you've got a few stellar outings in between there as well. The reason this is going to get ugly is because you know how it is with big-name athletes or big-dollar athletes who produce very little in Arizona. And I know Madison Bumgarner is trying. I know he doesn't want to fail. That's not an issue. The Diamondbacks manager doesn't need to say that. We all know he's trying. But to me, you look at the monetary investment and the lack of return, the lessons not learned. This baseball team, you go back over the arc of their history, they rarely ever learn their lessons. Rarely.
True.
And so this one's going to hurt because Madison Bumgarner came here with a lot of name recognition, a World Series hero, and it got off to from the rodeo on, this thing has been a bad, bad trip.
Wow, that's such a great point. I mean, that was kind of laughable in real time. We all had fun with it and Mason Saunders and all of it, but that might have been the highlight of Madison Bumgarner's stay here so far.
Yeah, and so, you know, this one, I don't know if you could have saw it coming, but this was quite a gamble that Mike Hazen made, and this guy doesn't make a ton of mistakes, but this one clearly looks like it's going to be an all-timer.
Well, I mean, looking back now, obviously when they ink Madison Bumgarner that deal, they don't know a global pandemic is coming.
Right.
Which... the shutdown of last year, playing a 60-game season with no fans, having basically no revenue coming in from the fans, is crippling to an organization like this. And then you tack on an $85 million contract that's going to increase in worth over the next couple of years before it goes down in the final year of that contract. There's reason to be concerned. Derek Hall, the president and CEO of the Diamondbacks, was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. And that question came up. Where is his concern with Madison Bumgarner right now?
I would also add to that concern list, you know, Tyler Clippard, Nick Ahmed, Cole Calhoun, Zach Gallen. You know, so we've had plenty to start this season out, and we've got to get right all the way around. I think with Madison, you look, and the velocity was where we were concerned and focused last year, but that's there. I mean, it was consistently, you know, 91 in last night's game. I think, again, if we had some offensive support, he did not look great. You know, he had flashes, but you've got to be consistent, especially when you're that seasoned and that successful as he's been. But if he had any sort of support, you're not so focused on him giving up five runs at Coors Field. I mean, if he comes out of the game after five and it's a 5-5 game or, you know, 5-4 game, you're not really focused on that.
Yeah, and maybe the goose egg last night makes it easier to defend Madison Bumgarner's performance.
Yeah, that too.
Because if they lost 8-7 or something like that.
Yeah, but are the expectations that low that five runs in five innings and nine ERA is
okay?
Fine,
yeah,
even if it's at Coors Field?
Yeah.
Look, again, I believe...
Look what the Rocky starter did. He went 8 innings. He was dazzling.
Well, I mean, have you seen his win-loss record at Coors Field?
21-10.
That's ridiculous.
It's insane.
And it wasn't just... It's not just the contract. It's that Zach Gallen is hurt. And the team desperately needed Madison Bumgarner to step up to be that ace so far, and he hasn't.
No, you also heard Derek Hall. I don't think there's a more banged-up baseball team in the majors right now than what they have. Do you want to lean on that as an excuse? Maybe to some degree. The reality of it is, in my opinion, the Diamondbacks needed bounce-back years from a lot of guys, and they needed to stay relatively healthy. And we're a week into the season, and neither one of those things has happened so far.
Except for Ketel Marte, who is now hurt.
Yeah.
Right. But you're right. You're right about that. So this is clearly an issue because I don't know if 91 peak is going to get it done for Madison Bumgarner. And I don't know this. I just think I know this, and that is, you know, his delivery, the ball is wide out, way back out in the open for everyone to see the entire delivery. Now he's at peak velocity, his slingshot arm angle, very, very tough to deal with. But I just think that with just a tick down in velocity, he's getting clobbered. And it can't be easy for him. He chose not to do a Zoom call with the media after the game last night. But that's also something you would expect from a leader, from your highest paid player. to go out and face it so the manager doesn't have to do that dance he just did. This is why all of this is so unfair to Torrey Lovello to me. And again, it's I'm not making him out to be, you know, who's a great manager? Scotty Beck.
John McGraw.
Anyone from the last 100 years you'd like to bring up?
Miller Huggins.
There you go.
Leo DeRocha.
I'll say this, because I did have this thought. It's not there yet. It's trending in a certain direction. But Madison Bumgarner has the potential to be one of those rare athletes who is absolutely revered and beloved in one city.
Wow.
And is
reviled in another.
Is the source of stress and consternation in another.
That's a great point. That's a really, really great point. And I was all in on Madison Bumgarner because I thought, oh, this is good. This is exactly the kind of guy this team needs. This is the kind of Randy Johnson fire this team needs. Somebody the fans can rally around. And they've gotten nothing.
Pretty much. Two good starts at the end of a lost year.
Yeah, and he had one really good start in spring when he struck out six guys, and I thought, okay, all right, this is going to get better. I don't know if it's going to get better, Vinny.
Yeah, we'll see. Last game of the three-game set at Coors Field today. It is an afternoon tilt, 12:10 first pitch, so we'll have D-backs on deck for you coming up at 11:15. But coming up next, there's a mock draft out there that has the Cardinals being bold, trading up to get whom? We'll tell you next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Marotta.
Trips wide to the right for the Gators. Pitch the tight end with his hand in the dirt on the left. Snap back to Trask. Throws the ball down the field for Pitts.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts, University of Florida, one of the most unstoppable players in college football last year, at the tight end position. Why are we talking about Kyle Pitts? He was a somewhat frequent, link to the Cardinals in early mock drafts, but his stock is rising, and it's been weeks since he showed up in a mock draft, going to the Cardinals at 16. That's not going to happen. But he did show up linked to the Cardinals in a mock draft that was released today. And that came from Peter Schrager of NFL.com, who had the Cardinals making a bold move, Bick, trading from 16 to 7 with the Detroit Lions and taking Kyle Pitts, the tight end. I'm so torn on this as even as a concept.
All right.
Kyle Pitts is, I watched a lot of Florida football last year. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's really good.
There are people that are projecting he could be one of the all-time greats to ever play the tight end position at the NFL. Mm-hmm. Lofty, yes, I get it, but he's got the potential to do it.
Yep.
What gives me pause is watching the Cardinals struggle to get the ball to tight ends in this offense for the last 2 years. Was that because they didn't have somebody the quality of Kyle Pitts? But all I could remember was, Dan Arnold this, Dan Arnold that. Dan Arnold is going to be a major weapon for this offense.
Draft him in fantasy. He's going to have a breakout.
Yeah, he is the sleeper guy. And what did Dan Arnold do? It was a very, very pedestrian year for a tight end, and he moved on to Carolina in free agency.
Yeah.
I don't know with confidence how a tight end fits. I mean, does a player as good as Kyle Pitts fit anywhere? You can make that argument, but they haven't shown a propensity to use pass-catching tight ends.
That's really a great point. So everything is about fit in the NFL, right? Players have to get into the right system, the right team, right quarterback, all that stuff. Yeah, there are questions whether or not this offense is suitable for a player of that talent, and because you wouldn't want to not utilize that talent, especially when you're going to have to give up what it would take to go from 16 to 7. To go from mid-first round to 7, it's going to cost you at least a 1 next year, at least, and your pick this year.
And probably some other stuff, too.
Maybe some other stuff as well. So that's an expensive price tag. The player's worth it. I did some reading on this guy, and they're calling him the LeBron James of tight end prospects.
Well, would you like to hear a little bit more on?
Oh, sure.
Oh, wait. Do you have this handy?
I happen to have a little draft scouting report.
What a coincidence.
Here we go.
Kyle Pitts, tight end, Florida.
Pitts is one of the polarizing players in this draft. Many view him as a solid tight end, but some think he's just a big receiver. But most agree, Pitts is a good football player. Pitts has good height, good burst, and moves very well out in space. While he won't blow you away with his speed, he knows how to get open. While he gives a lot of effort, Pitts is not ideal as a blocker. Although, he isn't the traditional type of tight end. Pitts should be a mismatch nightmare in the NFL. NFL comp, Raiders tight end Darren Waller.
Yeah, here was his coach at Florida, Dan Mullen, on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin last month talking about Kyle Pitts. And yeah, take this with a grain of salt because this is his college coach, but he says some pretty strong things here.
He is just a phenomenal athlete, you know, and he's a guy that, you know, plays tight end, and at a solid tight end, you know, I mean, he's going to put his face in there, he's going to block, he's going to cover people up. He's not going to be an extra offensive lineman. You don't mistake him for that. But you can move him around, and he might be the best X receiver I've ever coached.
Wow. High praise.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a little conflicted on it. I really like the idea of bringing in an impact tight end to this offense because it seems to be the thing. I don't know about giving up that much and slotting him in this offense. I wouldn't be against it. Yeah. It would be an exciting move, and I suppose they're at a place where they can do this. But you could also trade up and maybe get a Patrick Surtain if you really liked him. If you really like one of those corners before this, I just don't know. I mean, Cardinals experience trading up. The Josh Rosen thing did not work out. Kyle Pitts is different. He is not. There's really very little risk of a bust in him. It's an interesting, aggressive move.
It is. Dave Pasch, who is the play-by-play voice for the Cardinals, also called the Suns game last night on ESPN. He was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. Would he trade up if he was the Cardinals to get Kyle Pitts? And he called some of his games in college, too.
Well, here's the thing. Would you do that for a wide receiver? Would you do it for the best wide receiver in the draft? Because you have to look at Kyle Pitts the same way. If Kyle Pitts to you is a game changer, you get him and all of a sudden your passing game elevates to a championship level, then it's worth it. Because I understand what Wolf was saying earlier, too, about blocking. I mean, that's important, but if you're going to trade up that high to get a tight end, you're doing it because of how dynamic he is as a receiver. I think he's that dynamic. I'm just not sure. You know, do the Cardinals have the assets to do that? Do they really want to do that? Are there some other players that they have on their board that they think are top 10 players that might slide to where they are in the draft?
Yeah, and I freely admit, again, you can look at this one of two ways. Mm-hmm. Did the Cardinals struggle to get the ball to tight ends as pass catchers because the tight ends weren't great? Was Dan Arnold a disappointment last year? Did he do enough to instill confidence in the rest of that offense? Hey, call my number, throw it to 85, yeah. I'll be open. He was not a big factor. Is Kyle Pitts good enough to empower the rest of that offense? I think it's a fascinating question, but I have my concerns about it.
Yeah. Well, so do I, and I think you put them out there very eloquently. It's I think a lot of that, the issue is we don't know what Cliff Kingsbury's system is supposed to look like. We hope it's not going to look like it did at the end of last season, but I think there's some ambiguity about that. Would a guy like this be featured in an offense that it seems to be one read and then take off? I don't know. You better be darn sure that you'd get max value out of him if you drafted him. I wouldn't be against it. He's a phenomenal player, and you can't go wrong bringing in guys who are universally stamped as, okay, that guy is special.
Yeah, but I think that's a situation, to kind of piggyback on your point. If you make this move, because again, Kyle Pitts is not going to be there at 16 for you. You would have to move up substantially to get him maybe even higher than 7. But if Kyle Pitts is there and you make that decision, we're going all in on this kid. He's got to be number 2 in targets next year.
Yeah.
That's
true.
The way it's got to go.
That's a good point. I like that. I heard rumblings, and yeah, Peter Schrager in the same mock draft has the Bengals choosing Ja'Marr Chase. That's at 5 for a wide receiver. Now, that's pretty high for a wide receiver, but everything I've been hearing about this Jamar Chase kid is he's a step above everybody in this, according to some people.
And that's with taking a year off.
And, right.
That's how good he is.
Yeah.
He was unstoppable in the LSU offense.
Yes, exactly. And now talk about maybe pairing him back up with the quarterback he won a championship with in Joe Burrow. You've got a situation where this is it's something where you might see those level of skill players being scooped up very early on. I'm intrigued by it. I did not expect to hear that as a possible scenario. And once again, as we've said many, many times, Peter Schrager has got a good relationship with Cliff Kingsbury, so his stuff on the Cardinals, generally, he's not throwing darts.
Granted, there's some other interesting things that you're not going to see in a lot of mocks from Peter Schrager's mock today.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the Patriots moving up to number 4 to get Justin Fields. Like you said, Chase going 5 to Cincinnati. He's one of the few I've seen that doesn't have Penei Sewell of Oregon as the first offensive lineman off the board. He's got Rashawn Slater from Northwestern going 6. He's apparently not as high on some of the corners. J.C. Horn lasting to number 21. Najee Harris going number 18. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff in this, and I guess that's the point of mock drafts is to bring up possibilities.
That's a good point.
Just to drum up attention and, get reaction
to
it. But,
Well, he did. It worked.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. No, I think so, too.
And I wonder how legit an option that is for the Cardinals, considering that they right now are at number 16. Coming up next, everybody in the basketball world still buzzing from last night. Suns win over the Jazz. We'll revisit next. Bickley and Marotta live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.